Blog Talk Radio.
Yeah. Oh, it's time to get real. Oh, yeah. It's a new experience.
Spirituality.
Yeah, keep your ears open for this one,
man. Spirituality.
You got a question for RLM?
Spirituality.
Yeah, it's time to get some answers, baby.
Welcome to Reality Spirituality. I'm your host, Rebecca Lynn Norrington, and I want to thank you so much for joining me today. It is going to be an exciting show, one of my most exciting shows. And before I get into the show, I want to explain to my new listeners what the hell does reality spirituality mean? What kind of show is this? Reality spirituality. It's not a religion. It's a guideline to living connected to the most powerful source, energy source in the universe, a connection to the universe. And some people use the term God. Some people say Buddha. Some people say higher power source energy. I like to use the term universe. So reality spirituality is about staying connected and living connected to that source in every waking moment. Reality spirituality dissects our everyday life experiences. I mean, from the most minute to catching a bus, to dealing with a quote-unquote rude cashier, to coworkers, relatives, husband, wife, girlfriend, relationships. It dissects every single moment to reveal why we're not as happy as we could be. And there are reasons why we're not happy in certain moments. And we talk about that. We talk about what subtracts from our happiness, what behaviors and thoughts subtract from our happiness. And we talk about what adds to our happiness. So that's what reality spirituality is about. And when I use the term happy, let me be clear. It's an internal happiness. It's an internal peace. It's an internal thermostat setting, if you will, that is always set for peace and contentment and gratitude and joy and love and all of those really, really good settings that just relax us and take us to a place where, quite frankly, I love to be in every one of my waking moments. So that's what this show is about, and I want to thank all of you for sending me your questions and your comments, your suggestions. I read all of your emails, if not the same day. I will get to them the next day. That's a promise. And, of course, you can follow me on Twitter at R.L. Norrington, R.L. Norrington, that's N-O-R-R-I-N-G-T-O-N. But before I go on with business, you know what? Have you ever experienced Christmas in July? Well, today, this is going to be Christmas in July for me. My guest, Robert Stuberg, I have known him, oh my goodness, what is it, 5-6 years? And I started off, Robert coached me for a few months. And the interesting thing about Robert, before I just get into details, what I love about this young man is, as soon as you talk to him, as soon as you hear his voice, you feel like you have a friend. He feels like a friend. His energy of caring, specifically caring about you and wanting to coach you and help you to be the best you can be. I mean, like I said, it feels like I have a good friend. And I've stayed in contact over the years, even though we're not, he's not coaching me, but I stayed in contact, and I want to say this man is accessible. Anytime you you need whatever, he will always be there for you, and that's what I appreciate and love about this young man, Robert Stuber. So it is Christmas in July for me, but let me read a little bit about his bio because it's very, very impressive. Robert Stuber is one of the world's leading authorities in personal and professional success. He's an entrepreneur, author, speaker, coach, and consultant. His results-driven strategies for achievement have earned him constant praise for his life's work. Robert has created a wide range of products focusing on personal and professional success, including books, let's see, the 12, you know what, I'm trying to read this at the same time, the 12 Life Secrets, Creating Your Ultimate Destiny, and the 12 Wealth Secrets. So Robert Stuber Robert, actually on my show, I just want to let you know that sometimes I let the expletives fly. And for all my home people, Robert Stuber is the shit. So, Robert Stuber, welcome to Reality Spirituality.
Well, Rebecca, that's quite the introduction. I'm not sure I can live up to that, but it was certainly fun to listen to. So it sounds like you're having a good day today so far, yes?
You know what? Honestly, Robert, I've decided to have all good days. That's one of the things I make a choice to have. Every single day is going to be a good day for me, and it doesn't matter what happens to me. It doesn't matter what doesn't happen to me. But let me just let you into it. This morning I was supposed to – I actually subbed for a psycho class. You know, I teach aerobics. I've been teaching aerobics for over 30 years. And so this morning I had a psycho class that I taught, which was at 5:45 Pacific time. So, yes, I am up. I have been sweating. I came home, washed my face, put the glasses on, and here I am talking to you. So I'm ready to go. Yes, great morning.
Fantastic. So what would you like to talk about today? What's your flavor for the show today?
Okay, flavor. I love it. Well, I want to talk about your beginnings. And when I say your beginning, I'm talking about something that you haven't said before, you haven't revealed before to your audience. I know that you used to do radio, and I know you've been interviewed. But can you walk us through a little bit of your journey in the beginning and how, because I remember you telling me that you admittedly workaholic, and I just want to share with my audience, because this is a real life show about real life people, share with my audience your workaholic days and how you made the switch. How did you make that switch into a more fulfilling lifestyle, if you will? Would you like to share that?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. It's interesting. It all started for me, I think, when I it was actually a coach. It was somebody that I was working for, and this particular individual took an interest in me and noticed some things in me that maybe I didn't notice in myself. And he started recommending some books and some CDs at the time, cassettes even, and things that I could listen to. And we would sometimes have these conversations after work about various things. And I'll never forget one thing in particular really struck me. I listened to a little cassette called The Strangest Secret by Earl Nightingale. And on that cassette, one idea really grabbed me. Earl Nightingale basically said that the greatest secret in the world was that as human beings, we become what we think about. And I thought, that's really an intriguing idea. We become what we think about. But I was also a pretty skeptical kid. I was a teenager at the time. And the thought came to me, I wonder if this is true. I wonder if the stuff he's talking about in terms of, becoming what you think about and goal setting and all these sorts of things, I wonder if there's really anything to it. So what I did, quite simply, is I said, I'm going to put this stuff to the test. I'm going to challenge it and see if it really works. And so I set three goals for my life, or at least for my foreseeable future. The first goal was to become financially independent by the time I was 30, because I thought, I grew up in an environment where money was always a problem, and I thought, money's probably going to solve lots of problems. Let's go for that. And if I can have any goal, if I can have any wish, let's go for that. Then number two, I thought, it'd be interesting to be involved in the kind of business that Earl Nightingale's involved in, this personal development stuff. It just intrigued me, the psychology and the philosophy of it all. So I said, number two, I want to work for Earl Nightingale, or work in this company, Nightingale Conant. And then the third goal was, I said to myself, if this turns out to be true that I can become financially independent, then I can actually work in a company that I would like to, work in. And, everything is working as I thought it would go, then I want to have my own company and organization. I want to take it that far to be an entrepreneur and, do my own thing. Well, to make a long story short, all those things happened. By the time I was age 29, through a number of things I did along the way, I became financially independent. Haven't had to work since then, at least work for money. Shortly after that, I joined Nightingale Conant, became executive vice president, and for many years really ran large parts of the company. And then a number of years ago, I broke away to start my own company. It was called Success.com, and it was one of the fastest-growing companies on the Internet. I grew that for a number of years and then eventually sold that company to Success Magazine and created a number of additional companies. I now have, in the Success category, I've got Success BZ. I changed the suffix from com to BZ because suffixes don't really make any difference. So I've got success.bz, but I've also got failure.bz, which is an interesting website because it looks at the other side of success, or the other side of failure, if you were. And then I created a strategic publisher for publishing. I created intent management for management things, basically a whole bunch of Internet enterprises. But to get back to your question, there was a day when I realized that I really had become a workaholic, and I really had to look at that carefully. And in fact, it happened not too long after I achieved financial independence, because I think most of your listeners would recognize this idea of having achieved a goal, something that you really wanted in your life, and then you get it, but your mind starts to ask you this question: is this all there is? And suddenly, even though I had achieved financial independence, I wasn't all that happy about it. My mind started saying, well, it's a lot of money, but maybe you need more money. Or what if you lose the money or something happens? I mean, again, lots of questions came in that kind of started to take my peace of mind away. And I suddenly realized that what I had done all my life is I had achieved things in an effort to be happy, which is what most people do in the world. They achieve things, and then when they get it, they become happy. And I realized that that's a losing strategy for life, to achieve to be happy. It's much better to figure out how to happily achieve. In other words, when you achieve to be happy, you sacrifice large chunks of your life toward, these goals or these things that you want. And oftentimes you're not enjoying the process, but yet life is not a destination. It's a process. It's a journey, as so many people say. So you're much better off if you can figure out a way to enjoy the process. And that has a lot to do, I believe, with figuring out your unique talent, what you're really gifted to do, and what you really enjoy doing, and then doing those things in service to others. I think that's the ultimate secret of life, figuring out what you're gifted to do and doing that thing in service to others. So that's, I guess, a little bit of an overview, if that answers your question a little bit.
Yeah, yes, it does answer my question. And you said so many interesting things that I want to kind of go back and touch on them. I one of the things that I talk about on this show is getting, being happy. There's two different types of happiness. There's not two different types, but achieving happiness or searching for happiness. Basically, I believe that we're searching for a feeling. We want to feel. We want to feel. We want to feel good. We want to feel contented. We want to have this feeling. And so this external, anything external, whether it's money, whether it's titles, whether it's degrees, athlete, whatever it is externally, awards, it's not satisfying. And I actually did it the opposite way, Robert, because I tell my audience, when I was younger, I wanted two things. I wanted, number one, to live to my potential, and I wanted to be happy. So I'm doing everything in a different order. And it's interesting because, but I still try it all. Maybe if I take the trip to Europe, or maybe if I get married, or maybe if I live in this neighborhood and have, you know, another house over here. But for some reason, I tried the trips, and it just, like you said, it wasn't satisfying. There was something else, and there's a feeling. But I want to get back to what you said about this unique talent, and because I totally understand what you're saying. Could you touch on that just a little bit? Because I want to come back to that unique talent and finding out your unique talent. And I do believe that we all have gifts to share. But
yeah. In fact, let me do a couple things. I just want to say one thing about the your happiness statement, because I think that what you're talking about is very important, and yet it's something the vast majority of people don't understand. You know, most people, if you ask them what they want or what they would give, you know, what would make them happy, they'll start listing things.
Yeah.
You know, and one of the first things will often come up is money. I mean, that's what came up with me. I thought money would solve every problem. That's why I went after money first. Of course, money doesn't solve every problem. It does, however, often, you know, give you a better environment with which to, you know, arrive at your problems and a little more style, but it's not going to solve all your problems. But what's interesting is if you really dig into what people want, and I do this a lot with clients. I'm sure you and I did it at one time, but, you know, you say, well, I want this much money. Okay, that's great. Why do you want that money? And if you get them to answer that, they'll say, well, if I had that kind of money, I could live in this kind of house, I could drive this kind of car, I could do this kind of travel and so forth. Okay, great. Now, why do you want that? And if you keep asking people the why question long enough, eventually they'll tell you what it is that they really want. And what they really want always is exactly what you said, a feeling. They want a feeling. Everything we do as human beings is to change the way we feel. We want to gain more pleasure, and we want to avoid more pain. And I think one of the emotions certainly at the top of the list for everybody is happiness. And we think that happiness is something that can be attained in the outside world, and of course it can't. Happiness really is an emotion. It's something you feel. And what's interesting is all of us have rules, conditions inside of our head that either allow us to access happiness or keep happiness away from us, based on what has to happen. I mean, you could have a rule that basically says, you know, every day I wake up and have a new day, I'm happy. You know, you could also have a rule that says I've got to weigh my perfect weight and be, you know, 15% body fat, and I've got to have this much money in the bank. And I mean, you can make a huge list of things that, you know, maybe nobody could even achieve all those things. I mean, I've coached clients that have had what, from the outside looking in, is the dream life. You know, everything about their life is just glorious, spectacular, and yet they're not happy. Why are they not happy? Because of the rules, because of the conditions. I've also had people I've dealt with that'll say something silly like this, and they'll say, well, you know, Robert, I figure every day above ground is a great day. And you know, that's true. Every day above ground is a great day. And it's enough to be happy. And here's what's the last point in this. Here's what's most interesting. If you go about your life from a position of happiness, from a position of inner peace and inner joy and inner, you know, just an inner sense of being, you know, connected with the world around you, you'll achieve more. You know, the people that are happy achieve more and enjoy it more in the process. So, again, I wanted to kind of underscore what you said there, which was really, I think, important. Now getting to the unique talent thing, this is a very interesting topic. And it's probably my favorite topic now because unfortunately, most people are not brought up to recognize or even understand the idea of unique talent. And if your listeners want to kind of understand this with me, I'll have them do something. So if you're listening right now, basically do this for me. Draw a large circle on a piece of paper. Draw a second circle, a little smaller, inside that circle. Draw a third circle, a little smaller, inside that circle. And then finally, the smallest circle in the center. So basically, you have four circles that look like a target with a bullseye. Now, think with me that these four circles represent what you can do with your life. So the outer circle Let's call that the circle of incompetence. Those are things that you don't do well. And I would say in many cases there are things that you're not programmed to do well. All of us don't have the same skills and abilities. You know, some people are great at math, some people aren't. Some people are great in athletics, some people aren't. Some people have great dexterity skills. You know, some people have incredible music skills. I mean, there's all sorts of talents and abilities, but not all of us, you know, they're not given out equally to everybody. So what I like to say to people is the things that are in that area of incompetence, that's probably not where you want to spend your life. It's just not going to be a fun way. I mean, I know we live in a culture where people say, let's identify all of your weaknesses, improve those, and that'll be the key to living a better life. Well, I'm here to tell you that's not true. After coaching for many decades now, that just doesn't work. You're better off to delegate or have somebody else do the things you're not good at and figure out what you are good at. So that's the outer circle, incompetence. The next circle in is the circle of competence. So that basically means this is where most of the world makes a living. You get schooled in a skill or an ability or something, and you do it well enough, you know, to get paid for it, to do it in the service of others. Challenge, of course, is you often don't make a lot of money here. You know, making money is always comes down to the demand for what you do, your ability to do what you do, and the difficulty of replacing you. And, of course, if you're living in that just circle of competence, again, there's not going to be a huge demand. It's going to be easy to replace you. It's not a great place to be. So the next circle in gets more interesting. I call it the circle of excellence. And the circle of excellence means that you've taken a skill and you've developed it to a very high degree, to a degree where others recognize you do it really, really well. And this is where you find people in the world that are, you know, the high achievers, you know, making good money, great careers, all those sorts of things. But there can also be a challenge there. And the challenge there is this, and I have this, I've had this with many clients over the years. They'll say to me, you know, Robert, I'm making plenty of money. I'm doing well. From the outside looking in, it seems like I have a great life, but I feel like something's missing. Like there's something more, something different I should be doing. And what that is that's their inner intelligence trying to point them in the right direction. And what their inner intelligence is trying to point them to is the bullseye, the middle of that target, which I call unique talent. And what I mean by unique talent is something that not only that you do really well, but it's something that you're passionate about. It's something that just flows from you. And it's based on a gift that you have, but it's a gift that you develop over time. I mean, a perfect example of unique talent was little Mozart, Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart. 2 years of age, he's outside in the farmyard where they lived, and he heard a pig squeal. And he'd never spoken a word. But his parents were musicians, and he'd been around music, you know, for a couple of years and heard them talk about it and so forth and watched them play the piano and so forth. So he hears this pig squeal, and his dad says, he's trying to say something. What's he saying? And they finally make it out. What he's saying is G sharp. And his dad's astounded. What do you mean G sharp? So he goes into the piano, hits G sharp, and sure enough, that pig was squealing G sharp. That little boy had perfect pitch. Meaning that he has a skill or ability that really only about 1 in 10,000 people have. But here's what's really fascinating. Not only did he have that skill or ability, but he developed it. He lived in a musical family. His dad really took an interest in him, helped him develop that skill, and he became a musical genius unlike the world has ever seen. Now, conversely, I can tell you about somebody that I went to school with that had perfect pitch, never thought it was really valuable or worth anything, and is now working in an auto parts store. Now, I'm not saying there's anything wrong working in an auto parts store. There's not. But my goodness, would I love to have perfect pitch. And if I had perfect pitch, I would have done something different, you know, probably with my life if I had that kind of talent or skill or ability. So that's the whole thing, unique talent. All of us have something that we can do, something that makes us unique and special from everybody else. Just like they say, every snowflake is different. Every one of us is different. Never before on planet Earth has anyone existed with your exact genetic composition, with your exact profile. You're unique. And there's something special for you to do. There's a reason and a purpose why you're here. Your job is to find out what that is and then do it in the service of others. And if you do that, you're going to have a magical life, an absolutely magical life. So hopefully that answered the question of unique talent. How am I doing?
You're doing really well, and I'm going to challenge you on that. You ready?
Go for it. I love challenges. That's my favorite.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to challenge you on that because everything that you said everything that you said is true about the unique talent and finding a unique talent and discovering your unique talent. I agree 100%. However, discovering your unique talent, using your unique talent, does not have anything to do with happiness. It is not doesn't have anything to do with how happy you are going to be, how happy your life is, how happy you are. I can give you some examples. There are, like you said earlier, there are plenty of people in this world that are living and living and using their unique talent. And I'm not specifically saying if I know if they're happy or they're not happy. That's not my point. But say Michael Jordan, for instance, unique talent, LeBron James, Oprah Winfrey, unique talent, all of that. But that doesn't equal being happy, internally happy.
Well, I think that, there's two issues here. One is that, again, happiness is an emotion. And happiness is an emotion that we all have access to. In other words, everybody can think of a time when they've been happy. And the reason they were happy is because of something that happened in the environment and the way they defined it, or something that they thought about and the way they thought about it, you know, made them happy. So I think that, you know, happiness is certainly something you can control with your thoughts. But I also think it's important to remember what Kierkegaard said, that the most common form of despair is not being who you are. And I think if you're not being who you are, which is in essence your unique talent, if you're not bringing forth who you are, to a certain extent, that's going to be there. That question is going to be there weighing on you. And I think that not maybe that it's not possible to not have any happy moments and happy times, but I think that to not develop your unique talent is to kind of turn your back on who you are. And when you turn your back on who you are, I think it's hard to get the best out of life.
Well, this is the thing, because what you're and what you're saying is developing who you are, and who you are is developing some kind of skill or some kind of service, whatever, but that's still external. And when I say happiness, I'm not talking about a happiness, you're happy because of something happening. It's actually sitting, even the point of sitting in a jail cell and you have no, you can't, you know, you're basically in a cell and you can still have this inner contentment. I'm talking about this inner contentment. And I definitely know what you mean about developing it, but what if you are not able to develop it? What if you are sitting in a jail cell? What is that movie? Life is Beautiful, and this man and his son, you know, is in a concentration camp. And so in other words, things don't have to happen to have this internal contentment. That's what I'm talking about. And so we're talking about actually two different things. What about the person in a jail cell? What about the person that is in a hospital room with no arms and no legs? What about, so I'm talking about the foundation. In other words, the universe doesn't require, this is my opinion, doesn't require us to do anything to enjoy and to be content with who we are.
Well, I guess this would be the advice I would give somebody who's, you know, in that jail cell, or somebody that's, you know, in a hospital or somehow confined or whatnot. I'd probably recommend Viktor Frankl's book, Man's Search for Meaning. And if any of your listeners are aware of Viktor Frankl, they'll know that he was a prisoner in Auschwitz during the war, and lived in absolutely, you know, horrendous conditions. Mm-hmm. And, you know, what he learned as a result of that experience was this book that came out of it, Man's Search for Meaning, and the idea that people can take everything away from you except the contents of your consciousness, your mind. So is it possible to live in, you know, deprivation or horrendous situations and still have an inner calm and inner peace and inner contentment? Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I mean, one of the things that we see in the Eastern tradition is you'll have, Zen Buddhist monks that'll sit by themselves in a cave and meditate and generate, you know, perturb their senses and generate you know, unbelievable levels of bliss. So do we have those capabilities in our nervous system and in our, you know, in our bag of tools, so to speak? You know, absolutely. But I think what I'm talking about is the person that, you know, is living in, is lucky enough to live in a country like we are, the United States, and have a sense of freedom and some ability and some opportunity out in the world, and who wants to, you know, take advantage of that. I mean, you could sit by yourself alone in a cave all day long and generate happiness. You can absolutely do that, because happiness is an emotion that you generate. You're the one that decides what has to happen for you to be happy. And you can change those definitions at any moment in time. But I think the more realistic thing people are looking for is, you know, how do I, you know, have that sense of peace and have that sense of joy and still, you know, live an interesting life. Remember, one of my coaches early on had this plaque on his desk, and it said, never let somebody else's lack of balance affect your balance. And I've never forgotten that, because this particular individual, one of the things that always impressed me about him is that he could handle problems and challenges much better than the average person that I'd been around. And mm-hmm. it's because he lived by that. He didn't allow the challenges of the world to take over. You know, he had a sense of inner balance and a sense of inner calm and a sense of purpose, you know, that was deeper and stronger. Well, you know, one of my favorite stories from years ago is in the early days of circumnavigation of the globe, sailors in the Antarctic would see a really odd sight. They'd be sailing their ships, which were, of course, powered by the wind in a certain direction, and they'd see icebergs, these big, towering, monstrous icebergs moving against the wind. In other words, the wind is blowing one direction, and these icebergs, towering above the surface of the water, are going in a different direction. And it really puzzled them. They're thinking, how can this possibly be? And, of course, you know, as we are as human beings, we're curious and we learn, and it was studied. And, of course, what was found is these icebergs, yeah, you saw a big, huge, you know, towering thing coming out of the surface, but the bulk of the iceberg was down under the surface of the water, and it was caught up in the deep currents of the ocean. So regardless what was happening on the surface, the winds and the tides and all that stuff, didn't matter. This iceberg was caught up in the deep currents and was going along purposefully in that direction. And I think of that story a lot, because I think that's the way a person's life ought to be. You ought to have these deep currents that are so strong that they keep moving you in the direction you want to go, regardless of the adversity and the challenges that come in life. Because what all of us know is they're going to come. You know, you don't find anybody that gets through life without challenges or tests or adversity or whatever word you want to use to describe it. So, you know, I think that it's possible to live life and have that peace and happiness and balance all the way along. But I don't think you necessarily have to, you know, run away from life to get it. I think the real interesting thing is when you can be fully engaged in life and still maintain that peace. That's not easy. I don't claim that I do it all the time, because I certainly don't. Life knocks me off balance now and then. But what's interesting is if you study the fundamentals enough, things like this, you'll always come back to center. You know, you'll always kind of get back on course, like an airplane. I mean, it might be off course most of the time to its exact destination, but eventually, you know, that GPS gets it where it's supposed to go.
Okay. Well, and again, a lot, and this is where we are. I know exactly what you're saying, and getting to your point about the monks and living very spiritual. That's just because they're quiet and just because they're able to be quiet and be at peace does not mean that they are connected to the universe. I understand what you're saying, and see, this is the difference right here. Yes, and I love this. Now let's talk about some real life stuff, because you just said something that life knocks you down, or whatever, challenges you, not knocks you down, but challenges you. That's what this show is about. The show is about the challenges and how to respond to challenges, how to choose and respond to challenges. I'm just thinking right now, can you give me an example of this is something personal. If you want to answer it or you don't, give me an example of the time when you were, you know, challenged, I mean, personally challenged at something really specific, because you just said that sometimes you can live like that and sometimes you can't, you know, you're challenged. So can you share with us something specific, or would you feel comfortable doing that?
Oh, yeah. In fact, let me give you an interesting example going back to unique talent. Before I got involved in personal development, when I was very young.
No, I don't want another story.
Okay, what do you want?
This is what I want. I don't want another story. I want something. I'll give you an example. I'm challenged all the time, and I think I shared with you a long time ago. My mother disinherited me, and I hadn't seen my mother for 5 years. And this year is the first time that I saw her. Now, before I saw her, I tried to, let's forget about it and make amends, but it wasn't her time. I am still disinherited, Robert. I'm still disinherited. Yet I talk to this woman every single day. She visited me a couple of months ago, and I went to see her a couple months ago. The challenge is talking to her, loving her, accepting her, not judging her, even though and loving her in open arms, even though I am disinherited. That's a challenge. And even to be happy and be peaceful with that. When I'm talking about challenges, I'm talking about personal challenges that we all, and then I'm going to ask you a specific question, because I remember a few years ago, you said your house was burned down. And I asked you at that time, I remember asking you specifically, I said, well, and I think it was a month or 2 months after this incident happened, and I asked you, what have you learned from that? In other words, everything that happens to us, there is something good, there is a lesson in it. That's what I believe. There is a good lesson in it. In other words, everything that happens for our betterment. And so I asked you, what did you learn from it? And you actually told me that it was a little bit too soon. But I want to know what you learned about yourself after that incident happened.
Well,
what did you learn about yourself?
Sure. I mean, I think that that was a real life example of how impermanent things are. In other words, you can have a beautiful home sitting on a lake, which I do, beautiful home, and it can be gone. You can have that beautiful home filled with all sorts of things that are important to you, and they can be gone. And so I think what it does is it reminds you, of the impermanence of life. You know, it's not unlike a situation I've had with clients when they maybe lose a parent. And they start really feeling a sense of loss, because what's interesting is when we're kids, we all think that we're immortal. You know, other people are going to grow old and die, but not us, at least from the standpoint of, this incarnation, or however you want to talk about it. But when a parent dies, you start thinking, well, gosh, I'm next. This could all be gone. And so, I think with me, it just kind of underscored, what's most important. And I think reminded me that the things are not the most important. That, there are other things that are more important. Again, the phrase I like to always use is, what's important in life is not what you get, but who you become. And I think that out of that experience, I remember rearranging and really developing what I call power virtues, which are five things I think about every day. And I think anytime I have a problem or anytime I have a challenge, I always think about these things, because these are the things that always bring me back to center. Number one is the word faith, or the word trust. Like you said, believing that there's a reason or a purpose for things, even if you don't know what it is, but believing there's a reason or a purpose and trusting in the process. Second one is courage. Again, having the courage, because a lot of people get have a problem, a challenge, and they back away. They retreat. We talk about fight or flight, but for many of us, it's flight. It's retreat. And I think having the courage to step up and to lean into the problem, that's one of the things that we all admire. You think back to those old Rocky movies, Rocky Balboa, the thing that make those movies so popular is we all love somebody who just won't give up. I mean, he was just beat down and beat down and beat down, but nope, I'm getting back up. I'm not giving up. I can take a pounding and come back from it. I mean, that takes courage. It also takes the next word, number three, resolve, which is I like to define as promising yourself you'll never give up, that you're just going to hang in there, you know, no matter what. And then the last two are really simple ones. The fourth one is compassion. You know, when bad things happen to you, don't lash out at other people, which is easy to do. A lot of people take their anger out on others, you know, and that doesn't show a lot of compassion. And then finally, and by no means the last, but that's just the order I decided to put them in, was the word gratitude. That no matter how bad things are, you know, your house is burned down and you're sitting in the rubble. Well, would you trade your position for somebody in Bangladesh? Somebody in Iran, Iraq? I mean, you can think of some places that would be pretty bad. I mean, North Korea. Imagine trying to live in North Korea. So, I mean, there's always things to be grateful for. I'm in the United States. I've got insurance. We can rebuild. And guess what? Not only can we rebuild, we can make it better than it was. Remember the old $6 million man? We can make him better than he was. And the truth about the house is my house is now better than it ever was. It looks better than it ever did. It functions better than it ever did. You know, and I'm even prouder of the house now than I was before, and I loved it before. So I think that, you know, there have been a lot of things like that that knocked me down. The thing I was going to tell you, which is really quick, having to do with unique talent, is, you know, early on in my life, my goal was to be a world-class jazz musician. I wanted to be a world-class jazz musician. Wanted to maybe not only teach at the college level, but be a studio musician and all sorts of other things. And I went a long way down that road until one day I discovered, I would say I was excellent. I won a lot of contests, state contests and so forth and so on, even had a number of scholarships. But I discovered that there were people around me that had something like Mozart had. In other words, had a unique talent, a spark of genius. And then I didn't have that, and no matter what I did, I wasn't going to get it, because you're not going to necessarily develop a unique talent. It's something that's there. And at that point, I got so angry about it and disenfranchised the whole thing, I just quit. I just gave up music. Now, as it turned out, I went in personal development, being an entrepreneur. I made my fortune. Everything turned out well, but for probably 25 years, I never picked up an instrument, never played. And looking back on it, that was a mistake, because just because something isn't a unique talent doesn't mean you can't enjoy it, doesn't mean you can't still do it. So now I play all the time now again and love it. Have a lot of friends, you know, do some concerts and do some things, and it's a great avocation. But I think it's just an example of, you know, more into figuring out who you are, what you do extremely well, and, you know, being willing to enjoy who you are, the life that you've been given. So there you have it.
Well, you're so cute. I'm laughing.
Any other questions, or did I get them all now for you?
You didn't tell me what was your. You did say about your house burning down. You said that everything can be gone. So basically, what you're talking about is something that I talk about on my show, and having attachments. Having attachments to anything, having attachments to a home, a relationship. I have to even throw in my own son. And I'm talking about attachments to things subtracts from this. See, I'm coming from it from a really, really different perspective. Perspective, if you will, perspective of, I wrote this article, actually was published on your site, Universe versus Man, and there are universal concepts and there are man-made concepts. And man-made, this is just me, I try to stay away from. Listen, the universe is going to take me and guide me and put me wherever I need to be. I trust that. I surrendered years ago, and so it guides me, and it is. I mean, the doors are different doors are opening every day, which is just amazing to me what has happened. But there has been no effort. There has been no work. There has been no, I got to achieve this. I'm just sitting back and letting the universe drive, if you will. And one of the things I talk about on this show is, number one, there are no mistakes. There are never any mistakes. And that we all are as different as our fingerprints. And if I... And we're all here at a certain time for a certain reason. And the makeup, it's like comparing a flower to, you know, comparing a rose bush and comparing the flowers. So what I really want to share with my audience is, this is just me. There is nothing that you need to achieve. There is nothing that you need to do other than what you're inspired to do. And this man, there's a man-made, because I had it. If I sit down, I mean, there was a time where I would sit down Friday, Saturday, Sunday and do absolutely nothing. I mean, sit in a chair and do nothing. And I would feel bad about that. I would feel bad about it. And so I want to ask you, if you could just sit and do absolutely nothing, no emails, no, you know, of course you have a conversation with your family, but just nothing, could you feel okay about that for 30 days?
Oh, I mean, I could not only feel okay about it, I could feel great about it. I mean, I do that. I think one of the interesting things about being an entrepreneur is you get to control your time. And so basically that means, I mean, I set aside time to absolutely do nothing or to just to putter or to just do something that, you know, whatever. But I think that's one of the great freedoms of, you know, becoming financially independent, or one of the great freedoms of just having an entrepreneurial lifestyle where you can decide, you know, when you're going to work and when you're not going to work. I mean, I used to work 24/7. I mean, every day was a work day. I don't do that anymore. I mean, my week, a work week would consist of maybe, you know, Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday at the most, doing coaching, consulting, speaking, those sorts of things. Typically, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday are free days. Those are non-work days. I don't work at all. And what was interesting about that is I can now get more done in 3 days than I ever used to get done in, all, you know, 7 days, because what I think a lot of people don't realize in the world is sometimes if you work yourself too hard, you invoke the law of your returns start to diminish, or what some people call the law of diminishing returns. In other words, you're so tired, you're so enervated, you don't get your best work done. The example I sometimes use with people is, you know, if you go away from a vacation and you come back really refreshed and rejuvenated, you can sometimes get more done in a day than previously you got done in a week. And you can do that a lot more if you figure out, you know, what the best cycle is for you, what the best, you know, work rest cycle is. I don't think that a life without work is necessarily a good thing, because I think that's one of the fundamentals of life. I think all of us are meant to do something. I mean, it's good to be engaged in life, and to just, you know, do nothing is not good. But I think to have plenty of time in life to do nothing, I'd love to just sit around and think and ponder and wonder. And, you know, I love to think about, you know, questions without answers, which is the realm of philosophy. You know, questions that when I say a question without answers, you know, you could put the question to somebody and they might give you an answer, but they're giving you their answer. They're not giving you an absolute ultimate answer that's true for everybody. And that's okay. Those are the questions that are in the realm of philosophy, where you have to really decide for yourself what you believe and what your model of the world is, and then that's, you know, that's the reality you're going to experience. I know we're getting close to our time, so I wanted to see if there's anything we've missed that you wanted to cover in today's show. I've really enjoyed this. This has been awesome.
Well, I'm actually trying to pin you down to answer a question.
All right, you pin me down one more time then. What are you looking for? I did answer the fact that I can definitely sit and do nothing. So I got that one answered.
This is what I'm asked. This is a challenge now.
Okay.
I am confining you to your house. You even have your home. I'm confining you to your house for 30 days. You cannot work. You cannot do anything. You cannot do anything. Just enjoy your home in the house. Are you going to be comfortable with that? Now let me say this. The answer is either yes or no. Are you going to be comfortable with that? You know what? Let me throw it even a bigger wrench.
Well, no, you don't even have to throw any more at it. The answer is yes. I mean, right now, I'm from my desk here. As I'm talking to you, I'm looking out at a beautiful blue lake with some people sailing and doing windsurfing. I mean, I could sit here and do nothing for 30 days, no problem.
Okay, how about a jail cell?
Well, that wouldn't be as pleasurable, but I could do it.
Okay, so there you go. See, this is the show. That wouldn't be as pleasurable, and why not?
Well, I think that nicer environment cannot heighten our experience is to deny that we're sensory beings that have other senses. So, in other words, if you take somebody and you shut off, you give them sensory deprivation, doesn't mean that they still can't be happy. They certainly can, but you can enhance happiness with things like environment, things like travel. There's lots of things you can do to heighten your experience of life, and there's no reason not to do those things if you can.
Mm-hmm.
So
okay,
put yourself
I
in a jail cell for no reason, it doesn't make any sense.
It doesn't make any sense to you. And I'm actually just kind of playing around a little bit, but getting to the point of, because what I really talk about on the show is this internal happiness, no matter where you are, in a jail cell or on a lake. I contend that you can be just as, and I'm not talking about looking at something and being happy. That's using our senses. I'm talking about something from within, regardless, jail cell or on a lake, being content and happy. And you did answer that question, so thank you for that. And now I want to ask you another question. Because I get you. I definitely get where you're coming from. How are you different? How are you different than you were last month? I mean, specifically, how are you different? Nothing external. Nothing external. Internally, how are you different, if at all?
How am I different than I was last month? Well,
internally.
Well, it's interesting. It probably comes down to how you define life and who you are, but the essence of your life is the experiences that you have and the emotional intensity with which you experience those things. So in the last week, for example, my brother visited. We had a chance to spend a lot of time together, and we don't because we live in different cities and we don't get enough time together. And we had some really fascinating conversations. And so I would say I have a better sense of who he is and who he's become, probably the same thing with me. And I have a greater sense of continuity with just family in general and the connection that we all have to one another, not just those in our family, but, maybe those that even aren't in our family. It's just, I think as you get older, you can see more of a connection and more of a purpose and more meaning to it. So that's probably how I would answer that question.
So you're different because you have more of a continuity with family?
Well, no, I would say I'm different because my awareness in life has increased. And I think all of us, one of the key things that makes us who we are is our awareness. who we are. And so as I go through life and have more experiences, learn more things, you know, read more books, whatever it might be, those all add to your level of awareness. And I think as your awareness changes, you change as a person. That's what life is all about. It's about having great experiences or whatever experiences they are, and then how you define those. Again, think about life as the experiences that you have and the emotional intensity with which you experience those. In other words, the meaning that you attach to them. Some people can have wonderful experiences and attach very poor meaning to them. Other people can have, the meaning people attach to things is what it's all about. So it's not just the experience. It's not just what's happened. It's what you decide is important about what's happened and what you've taken away from what's happened.
That's true.
Has it been a good show for you? Or I should say, has it been good for you? It's been good for me.
Well, let me wrap it up because I really appreciate your time. I know that you're busy, and I basically just hounded you until you agreed to be on the show. And I loved it.
It was I think we talked about some really great stuff, and I hope that your listeners find it interesting. I really enjoyed our hour together.
Yes, I did too, and thank you so much, Robert. Thank you so much. So I'm going to wrap it up, and I want to thank my guest, Robert Stuberg, and you can find him on Success Biz, www.successbiz.bz, or just Google Robert Stuberg, S-T-U-B-E-R-G. And as usual, thank you all for listening. You can go to my website if you want some information more about who I am. It's Rebecca Norrington, RebeccaNorrington.com. And you can follow me on Twitter at RL Norrington. And I just want to say that I wanted to remind all my listeners that we all have choices. And in every moment, we can make a choice of how we want to spend our life, how we want to respond to this life. And you are so powerful, so be conscious and be aware and know that you can make whatever choice you want to in every moment. Happiness, this internal contentment, is your birthright, is who you are. You don't have to do anything. You don't have to achieve anything. You don't have to be anything. You don't have to. You are a gift just as you are, just by being here. I want to thank you for listening to Reality Spirituality. And until Saturday, I will see you then. Reality Spirituality, Rebecca Norrington. Thank you. I love you all.
Yeah, oh, it's time to get real. Oh, yeah.
Reality Spirituality.
It's the newest spirit.
Reality Spirituality.
Yeah, keep your ears open for this one, man.
Reality Spirituality.
You got a question for RLN?
Reality Spirituality.
Time to get some answers, baby.
Reality Spirituality.
Oh, now we get real.
Get real. Reality Spirituality.
Yeah, time to get down.
Reality Spirituality.
Yeah, you don't feel good now.
Get real.
Okay, everybody, this is me on Blog Talk Radio. If you're listening, to Aftermath. It's interesting because I have a different philosophy than our guest. And the reason why I have a different philosophy than our guest is because we're as different as our fingerprints. And I still contend that there's nothing that you have to do, there's nothing you have to achieve, there's nothing you have to get. You are a universal being, having a human experience. And I want to say that I love you and I embrace you and you don't have to do anything for me to love you. You don't have to be anything for me to love you. You don't have to achieve anything. And I'm actually talking to myself about that too, I'm actually talking to myself, because there was a time where I believed that I did have to achieve, I did have to do, I did have to produce. And I am not feeling like that anymore. So I wanted to share that with you. And until Saturday, reality spirituality again, and Sunday, reality spirituality again, until whenever the universe takes me in another direction. I love you all. Reality spirituality.
Yeah. Oh, it's time to get-